Welcome to the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and today we're talking about the strategies that help you stand out, be seen, and be heard. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to the Authority Playbook, the show where we break down how real credibility is built, sustained, and scaled. I'm your host, Jeff Brandeis. Today we're going straight to the core of authority, your people, because the market can smell it when leadership is brand deep, but culture just isn't there, it's shallow. Joining us today is Matt Popsell, PhD, Vice President, and godfather of talent optimization at the Predictive Index, a data-driven platform used to help leaders hire, develop, and align teams using insights, people insights. He's also the author of Expand the Circle, Enlightened Leadership for Our New World of Work, and hosts the Lead the People podcast, where leadership gets practical, not performative. Matt, welcome to the show.
Jeff, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to have our conversation.
It's awesome. So before, Matt, I'm very excited that you're here to begin with. We've obviously had known each other for a number of years. I never asked you this question, and before we actually dive into the actual show itself, I'm sure our listeners and myself included, all right, Godfather, talent optimization. Tell me, who coined that? Why do you go by that? And just give us a little story behind that.
Yeah, it's a fun title. Certainly raises some eyebrows here and there. But the Predictive Index has been in business since 1955, but it wasn't until 2018 that we actually sat down and tried to codify really what this discipline of what we came to call talent optimization is really all about. So by that time, I had gray whiskers, been around for quite a while. So I spent a lot of time actually developing sort of the core methodology, if you will, of talent optimization. And so with that sort of lofty contribution and my grand experience, I took on that term, godfather of talent optimization. I thought it was more like James Brown, the godfather of soul, but everybody connects it with the movies and Marlon Brando. So whatever it is, as long as the message of talent optimization gets through, then I'm just fine with it.
Okay. All right. We will remember that as we move forward. So thank you, Matt. So Matt, authority isn't just about what you say. It's really what the team experiences. You know, when leaders claim expertise, you know, but their hiring, their communication, even their culture tells a totally different story. And what we see basically in companies is that the trust erodes fast. So what we're going to do, focus on this segment, is authority begins with alignment of who you are, how you lead, and what your organization signals every day. So Matt, help. When leaders say they want authority, what are they really chasing? Respect, influence, or certainty?
Yeah, I think all of those and so much more, right? When we think about authority, it's really about this energy, this gravitas, this command that leaders really try to find. And I think it really is all about the alignment that you just mentioned, Jeff, when it comes down to where does that energy come from? Do I really know what I'm all about? Do I know my values? Do I have a bedrock of my own worldview and philosophy? Or is it something that I've just kind of been superficial with it? I haven't really stopped to explore who I am deeply, right? And I think when we get into our behavioral styles and preferences, what are my natural strengths? I tend to be a very energetic, engaging, motivating kind of person, but that comes with certain downsides too. That means I'm terrible at the details. I'm not really strong at follow-up. So I have to see where my authority is going to erode. It's with those people who need more of that from me than I'm naturally inclined to give. So I find that a lot of it comes down to when we have that authority, then things get faster, easier. People have more confidence. They can experience themselves in a deeper way through our own comfort and our own ability to carry that authority into the mission, into serving those people around us, to the purpose, and to the mechanics of the business. All of it gets easier when leaders show up with authority.
So how do leaders actually find this within themselves of how to become a true leader?
Yeah, some of it comes down to introspection. I think being able to have the courage to pay attention, to understand, like, you know, if I lost my temper in a meeting, what was going on? Where did that come from? You know, those types of things are important, that type of personal reflection. I also think that feedback from others, really important. So being able to ask and learn to take in feedback, to have feedback conversations, to understand better. And really from not only just our managers, the other executives in the firm, but also from peers and even from those who report directly to us. How are you experiencing my leadership? We don't want to make assumptions. And I do think a role for assessments like the Predictive Index and others that really fast forward that process of discovery both of self and others, can really shave off a lot of time in what's otherwise kind of a mysterious and lengthy process.
So, as we said in the introduction, you're the godfather of talent optimization, Matt. So tell us a little bit more. What is it? Why does it matter? And why is it just goes beyond HR?
Yeah, I think that's when we hear the word talent, we almost immediately think of HR. And it's not that that's wrong, but it's incomplete. I know that for myself, you know, I had military service, spent 6 years in the Marine Corps. They spent a lot of time focused on getting the people part right. We understand completely that mission accomplishment is first and foremost, but troop welfare is right behind it. And I carried that spirit with me into the corporate world. And I was surprised to find that in many ways, most corporations are more mechanical in their view than even the military is. So I think it really comes down to this notion that to be an effective leader, we've got to learn the people practices and understand the human dynamic as much as we understand all the technical bits of strategy and operations and technology. Definitely those things as well. So talent optimization, therefore, is all about the intersection of those two things. I always say, what's the work to be done and who's doing the work? And whether that's happening at an individual level, like an individual contributor being put into one job to do one set of tasks, or a little bit more complex at the team level, very complex when you look at teams of teams and the entire organizational level, but it always comes down to the same thing. This notion that we can somehow say, well, HR is for people. All that people stuff is for HR, but all the business stuff is what we do over here in the line business, all the functional parts of the business. That's just a complete misnomer.
So you talked about hiring the right people and putting them in the right jobs. How does that play into leadership and how you actually hire the right people for the right roles?
Yeah, I think as leaders, on average, we spend tremendously little time trying to think about what's the real aspect of this job. A lot of times when a leader or a hiring manager is asked, you know, what they need, the job requirements, they'll do a quick Google search or they'll talk to AI and say, like, tell me I need to hire a project manager. And this is a devastatingly poor way of going about trying to find a hire because you end up with this cookie cutter approach that has no context as to what you're really requiring. When you start to think about what's the behavioral requirements for the role, meaning what's the temperament of the person, what sort of natural human skills do they need to bring in? Are they, you know, let's say stick with project manager for a second. Are they dynamic and engaging like me? Are they more detail oriented, hopefully, than I am? That's going to be an important detail that we want to understand. Because if we don't get the hiring target right, if you will, we end up hiring people that we like, that we are like us, or that we enjoyed the interview with them. And that doesn't mean that they're really well suited for the task that we're going to be asking them to do day after day. So when we start to see that somebody leaves after the first 30 days because it was a poor job fit, that's not on them. You know, that's not on early career people, for example, who don't know themselves all that well. That's on us because we didn't really define the target. We didn't hire to the target. We didn't coach to the target. And we didn't prepare the team to interact with somebody who may be having a very different personality type or behavioral profile than they do. All of that's really on us as leaders.
Many times, you know, the VPs or the leaders of many organizations have been in place for a number of years. And at what point or what's an early sign that kind of indicates to them that my team doesn't really fully trust me at this point in time or the direction we're headed?
Yeah, I always like to start with the performance bit first. So do we see that we have underperformance? We're missing our targets. The metrics, they're not playing out the way that we had hoped. Are things taking longer? Are we having trouble absorbing change and pivoting when we need to? It's a very dynamic business environment right now. Are we seeing slowness in terms of adopting and reactive? We're not agile. We're more rigid. Those types of things as well. And is there more risk? Are we getting more inconsistency than we'd like in the result? All those are signs that we're not coming through as authentically, that we don't have the levels of trust, that we're not fully orchestrating the business in some way. Then I move on to the people part. When I think about engagement, retention, are we seeing absenteeism? Is there friction? Is there conflict, outright conflict, or even quiet conflict that everybody can feel but nobody really talks about? Are people coming to me saying, hey, can I talk to you in your office for a second? Like, that's a sign that there's a lot of drama happening. All those are also indications. So we look for the hard stuff. We look for the soft stuff and really try to take that evidence as saying, you know what? We need to call time out. Let's get back to foundations here. and make sure that both the business is performing well, but also that the people are having a positive work experience in performing that business.
Is there a time frame that you kind of look at, or you provide insight or guidance to the leaders of when we're missing our goals, or there's things are happening the way you want them to happen?
Yeah, early and often. I think whenever we start to see that there's a change coming, for example, we would want to make sure we have the capacity to do it. I see executives, for example, who are very quick to, they're very facile, right? They'll talk about the strategy has to shift, or we have to take advantage of this opportunity, or we've got a competitor who did a thing, we've got to react. And they're very facile in that way. But then they're, unfortunately, they may not have the leadership capacity in their organization to be able to fulfill that pivot, for example, when there are communication deficiencies, when decision-making is poor, when trust is low. Then in that example, I tell executives, you haven't earned the right to be able to move as fast as you would like because you've tolerated this sort of inauthenticity among your leaders. And you have these team dynamics that are not going to support you. It's too brittle for you to be able to execute this strategy without a loss of either engagement, morale, motivation, performance slippages, something I call corrective effort. When that goes through the roof, then all of a sudden we're wasting payroll on things that are just nonsense. But guess what? We earned it because we didn't do the things up front that we needed to. So I always say, let's pre-negotiate our differences. Let's pre-negotiate our execution. Let's build our capabilities before we need them. And that way they'll be there when we have to make that pivot, when we see an opportunity that we want to go after. So I'd say, you know, early is better than too early is better than too late.
How many levels of an organization does my authority actually affect? Is it more my direct reports? Is it deep down to the actual employee that is doing just odd jobs as well?
Yeah, depending on who you are. So I think that there's a couple conditions. One is that you're going to have the biggest impact, obviously, on the people you spend the most time with and that you interact with the most. That tends to be generally true. However, some people are in roles where they're natural connectors. Let's say my project manager from an earlier example, project managers tend to talk to a lot of different people to run projects. So that makes them a special case because they may be an individual contributor, but their authority could really be influential across a lot of different functions. So they're almost a special case. So you think about those connectors. Another would be, for example, highly regarded, high profile leaders, people who are really well respected. They can cast a really long shadow and in a good way or a bad way. And then finally, executives, obviously, because of the nature of that position, that type of authority can really shape the culture. It can really define and set, you know, basically what we reward and punish. People want to emulate and take on almost the personality of the founder or of the chief executive. So I think it depends based on those things that I just shared. But in general, you have the biggest effect on the people you spend the most direct interaction with. But in certain special situations, there's a lot of leverage and a lot of extended impact. And again, this can work for us, or if we're not careful, it can work against us. We may be inciting fear, for example, and eroding trust unknowingly in some cases. That happens all the time.
Gotcha. All right, Matt, we're going to take a short break, and coming up next we'll talk about how to turn authority into an actual system, the repeatable framework that aligns roles, behavior, and performance. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
Welcome back to the Authority Playbook. Want more conversations like this? Watch Now Media TV live or on demand anytime. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS to stream our bilingual lineup in English and Spanish. You're on the go? Catch the podcast version at nowmedia.tv. From business to lifestyle to culture, Now Media TV is on 24/7. Welcome back. We're with Matt Papsel from Predictive Index. And this segment is about turning authority into something operational. Because credibility isn't just a vibe, it's a system. And systems actually scale. So in this segment, we're going to talk about the marketplace with authority brands. How they win, because when they win, they look consistent, the message, the people, the results. Talent optimization gives leaders a data-informed way to align the right behaviors to the right roles so performance isn't dependent on heroics, which is really key. But Matt, when we talk about talent optimization in one sentence for leaders who thinks this is just HR, we touched upon it a little bit more, but take it a little further. Go a little bit deeper.
Yeah, when you think about aligning the business strategy with the talent capabilities, I say to produce a superior economic result. That's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to basically find a way to have our business perform at its best with and through our people. And I always like to say, Jeff, every business is a people business. So when you think about the root of competitive differentiation, it's whoever's going to get the most out of their people. So yes, we're going to invest in technology and equipment, depending on the industry, et cetera. But it's really the people who are designing programs and executing and innovating and all these things that are going to make the real difference. So it's all about alignment. And exactly as you said, when it comes to aligning what's required for a given individual or a given team or an entire function with the behavioral aspects of what it takes to actually do those things and do them effortlessly and well, you know, that's really what it comes down to. A lot of times if we put people in positions based on either reputation or they may have a skill set match, but aren't necessarily a behavioral match, we wonder why the energy drains, why there's friction, why there are breakdowns in decision-making or communication. And that's why there's been a misalignment. That misalignment almost creates a tax. So nobody wants to pay a tax, right? But that's exactly what happens when you have natural friction between asking somebody to do something that doesn't come natural to them, or when you have two or more people who have what I call competing goals or competing styles. Whenever we say, for example, sales versus marketing or engineering versus quality, these are natural tension points in a business, and those competing goals and competing styles can create a lot of erosion of all that value. You know, we've spent all this money on payroll, but then when it gets frittered away, that comes very problematic for CFOs and CEOs for sure.
So we've talked a lot about predictive index, and we talked a little bit about people data. And we all know, and I've been there myself, quite honestly, when you hire the wrong person for the job, it's costly. So how does predictive index and how does we reduce the hiring mistakes by using people data?
Yeah, when we start with a very clear picture of the job target in people terms, when we think not just about, you know, what you read in job advertisement about the tasks alone, but you get more clarity about what's the right type of person to do these tasks in a very natural way, then that's a very important step. Once you think about when candidates show up, right now, AI has made it easier than ever for every candidate to look like a dream candidate. Isn't that so great? No, it's not great at all. It's actually really challenging. So when you have somebody in an interview, now's your chance to really use the data that you can glean from who they are and how they naturally show up. You can reconcile that in your interview. If you have a thoughtful interview guide to help, you can triangulate across your interview team to swap notes and make sure you're making a collective decision, and also gaining buy-in from, you know, the coworkers, the future coworkers of whichever candidate's going to win the job. Then when you think about those first critical 90 days, how do we onboard people? Do we onboard everyone exactly the same? Well, that would be ridiculous because everyone has different personality types and styles. Some people are more socially oriented. We need to make sure that their onboarding experience has lots of interactions with coworkers. Then somebody else wants to make sure that they understand all the documentation, the rules. They want to do all the self-paced onboarding training so that they can be super confident before they really spend a lot of time with others. Totally fine too. These aren't judgment calls at all, but it's just pointing out that we need to have really tailor the coaching, the onboarding, the high levels of performance to make sure we get the hire right, both in design, both in the interview process, and then ultimately once they start on with us.
Yeah, that's most companies, I think, especially onboarding, it's boilerplated, right? It's basically everyone goes through the same funnel, they do the same things, and there's no really, you know, a choice in how they get onboarded. Is that something you kind of coach companies through as well?
100%, Jeff. And when you see really small companies, they almost have no process. So it's completely right. Ad hoc. And then when you see really mega large companies, it almost looks like compliance because nobody wants to get fired because somebody was doing the wrong thing. So it becomes very protectionary. Neither of those extremes is good at all. Instead, we're trying to figure out, like, what does it take to really assimilate this person onto an existing team or into an existing culture, help them ramp as quickly as possible, help make sure that they are basically aligned, performing the tasks that they're naturally aligned with. That part's going to come naturally, but that they're getting coaching on those areas that they may not as fully align with. So we always say, for example, a hiring manager can make a hire of somebody who's in not a 100% match to the tasks, but they're going to have to coach the gaps. They're going to have to own the development plan and surround that person with what they need. And that's very common. You know, when you think about, I always love to use the example of the bank teller. You know, we may not use bank tellers as much as we used to, but is that job about accuracy or is it about customer service? Those are two opposing things. The answer is, well, a little bit of both, because we can't have the count wrong when they're handing back your money. But at the same time, they have to schmooze a little bit. You know, we don't want it to be a completely robotic experience. So that's where you might end up with hiring somebody who leans one way or the other and gets the coaching for the rest. You know, that's just a pretty relatable example, I'd say.
So I've used predictive indexes in the past, which is how we met. I believe there were four quadrants in that basically kind of align people to certain areas of the job, as well as understanding what their strengths or weaknesses are. I'm going to ask you to dive a little deeper into the four quadrants and how it really kind of tells the leader what's the best fit for this person's role within the organization.
Yeah, 100%. And what's interesting about psychometric instruments like the predictive index, a full assessment system, there are literally millions of combinations that help us to distinctly understand someone's DNA. But we need a common language to be able to summarize this to something that we can actually manage and relate. And there are 17 distinct reference profiles, we call them. So, for example, I'm a persuader. That tells you immediately a little bit of something about me. I'm socially poised. I like to work with and through other people, for example. But as I mentioned before, my detail orientation, not my strength. So in addition to that, we also have found that there are these four major quadrants, as you point out, Jeff, that really help us understand the nature of work itself and the nature of people who do that work. So as an example, innovation and agility is an entire domain of work. Whenever there's new things to be done, we have these enterprising type people. They're very dynamic and they're very collaborative and they want to really make changes in the world. But another is teamwork and employee experience. This is really creating the social glue inside of companies. Think about strong culture. If you think about these types of these really belonging environments, people really enjoy showing up to work because they're getting something socially out of it. Then there's one called process and discipline, which is all about consistency, reliability, predictability, making sure the trains run on time. That's an important function in a business. And finally, when we think about results and discipline, this is all about competitiveness. It's about using existing data, being very analytic, being very objective about the business. So four very broad types of work, in every company of any size, all four of these are at play. So it's not like we pick and choose one. However, the culture will lean in one direction, which will help and will hurt, and depending on other people who are doing something in the opposing direction. So if we have a very innovative culture, we're moving very fast, we make a lot of mistakes because we like to be agile, well, your process and precision people are going to feel that. They're going to feel like the work I do doesn't get honored as much. You know, it doesn't get as much airtime in meetings. It's not celebrated the same way. And actually, by cutting corners at the executive level, you make it hard for me when I'm down here trying to make those trains run on time. So this is where the quadrants really help us understand the flavor of the work that needs to be done and understand how team dynamics can either be beneficial and work really well, or unfortunately, very commonly start to run afoul and start to underperform and create a lot of interpersonal issues.
Gotcha. Matt, if a leader wants to take a simple step this week, what's the first system move you'd recommend? Clarifying roles, maybe measuring the behaviors, recalibrating leadership communication. What do you think the first step would be?
Yeah, for me as a leader, it really starts with self-awareness. I always say that we have to lead from the inside out. You know, we have to take accountability for ourselves first. So if you haven't had exposure to something like the predictive index, being able to take the assessment for yourself, very quick, very brief, do it through the website, fine. But use and internalize that report to say, like, what am I all about? How is this showing up in my leadership? Where is this helping me? Where is this holding me back? Where could this be costing me trust? I really like to go deep with that self-awareness, because leadership is exactly about how others experience themselves when they're in our presence. Because everyone's really fixated, obviously, on just trying to get through work. You know, it's a tough environment out there right now. And I have to understand that I'm creating the conditions in which other people are operating. So I can't make anybody do anything. I don't care if you're the CEO, you can't make people do things in your organization. However, the way you show up as a leader and what you put into your culture and what you build around you as a system, that's an extension of who you are. So that's where authenticity really starts to scale really well. So it all starts with that self-awareness to me. After that, yes, absolutely. Hiring and bringing the right people into the organization, stop bringing in the wrong people. That's another very operational step that we need to take for sure. And then I would say team dynamics. I think that teams do the most interesting and dangerous work in companies today. And I say interesting because business is complex. Very rarely do you have one person who's responsible for a multi-million dollar contribution to your bottom line. Instead, it's teams of people. Sure. But it's right. Dangerous because there's so much friction. There's so much opportunity to actually destroy value if we do teams wrong.
Gotcha. Up next, Matt, we'll talk about the audience, how they see you as an authority on the outside, but your team feels it on the inside, right? We'll talk about the leadership mindset and how to expand influence without burning out the people. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
Welcome back. Authority is easy when things are going well. The real test is when pressure hits. Growth, turnover, conflict. Change. Matt, you wrote Expand the Circle because the world of work changed and leadership had to change with it. So we're going to talk about really how modern authority isn't dominating. It's clarity, it's steadiness, and it's care. The leaders who scale influence are the ones who can hold standards and humanity. This segment will give viewers language and tools for credible leadership that doesn't collapse under stress. Matt, what does it mean to expand the circle, and what does that look like in the real organizations on a random, let's say, Monday, Tuesday, day of the week?
Yeah, I really encourage leaders to lead from the inside out. And so when you think about how do we lead ourselves, that's the first challenge to any leader. And I don't care what level of the organization you're in or how long you've been in the business world or whatever field you're in. It does begin with leading yourself. So when you think about having awareness, having some level of acceptance of your strengths and your limitations, these things are very, very important. Understanding your natural tendencies. How do you respond under pressure and stress? How do you start to modulate, if you will, your own emotional response? We're human beings, right? We have emotional responses. If I'm a CEO and I need to go to the board and tell them that we had a disappointing quarter, that's going to take a toll. But how's it going to show up in my leadership? Big question. But expanding the circle doesn't stop there. Now we have to go out and expand out one more layer. Let's talk about with one other person. Let's stick with the CEO for a second, who knows that they are going to go and report some lower than desirable numbers to the board. What about their relationship with their CFO? Is that going to be a strained relationship? Is it one that there's going to be around, this is difficult, but we can overcome this together? The interaction of those two in very emotional times is going to really come out. And so how you lead with one other person, and that could be somebody who works for you, it could be somebody you work for, whatever it might be, that's the next level of expanding out. Then we keep going. Let's talk about the entire executive team. So now we know that there's pressure to rebound from a down quarter. How are we doing this across all the different functions? People are starting to worry. Should I be updating my resume? What's going to happen? What are going to be the consequences? This is defining the leadership environment. So what sort of dynamics do we use to paint the positive vision of the future and make sure that commitment and collaboration remain high? Expanding out further, can we talk about the entire organization? When you think about culture, how do we stay committed to the mission, even when things are hard? How do we make sure that we practice wellness, that in this day and age, when everyone's more burned out than ever and overly stressed and feeling isolated, maybe we've shifted to hybrid and remote work formats and people aren't feeling it. That's something that's going to define and characterize our leadership environment. And then finally, what I say is leading out in the world and realizing that our leadership doesn't end just because we're not in quote unquote work mode. I don't even know what that is anymore, really. But when you think about your family, when you think about your community, when you think about society, depending on how far out you can expand that circle of your consideration, you can still show up as a leader. You can still make a positive impact. You can be of service to others as much as you are proactive and driving in terms of your own actions and behaviors. So that's just a pretty brief sort of introduction to how expand the circle is really all about how do I use my own self-awareness and my own sort of way of approaching this, but really take the interest of others. And I always say that interest should work from outside in and action should work from inside out.
And that's a pretty powerful segment there of learning more about the expand the circle. Love to be able to dive deeper into it. But, you know, I think from an audience perspective, it's something that they should look into and follow up with. But you also touched upon some of the key factors here as a leader of bad results, not performing, the division's not doing well. But how do leaders keep that high performance? Because expectations these days are at an all-time high. And leaders might slip into that fear-based management. How do you stop that?
Yeah, I think it's very natural, right? Again, we have to allow ourselves the space to have the emotional response. As a leader, as a CEO, it's okay to be worried. It's okay to go through and say something's showing up in me that I'm feeling like exposed in some ways. I'm feeling betrayed. I talk to CEOs and say, I feel betrayed. I feel that, it's natural. But I think also challenging those underlying assumptions of, does that mean that the organization is not working hard? Does that mean that the competition is going to definitively outpace you forever? Does it mean that, you know, the board's going to immediately want corrective action? Like, these things may be true, but I think they're not always as true as we make them seem. So I think remaining level-headed, allowing ourselves to feel the emotion, but quickly moving and understanding and making sure that we don't just close in. As soon as we start to get focused on our own self-interest and our own fear-based response, as you said, Jeff, we start to close in possibilities. And this is a time when we really need to remain open. We need to make sure that we're mindful about what we're experiencing so that we can collect all the right information. We can strengthen relationships, not destroy them at a time when we're going to need them. And that's really the challenge, the crucible of leadership is not, as you said, during those easy times, it's during the challenging times. That's where, you know, real leadership emerges.
So how does a leader rebuild that type of authority with a team that's kind of skeptical, or maybe they're burned out, or they just feeling lost?
Yeah, I recommend transparency. I don't think it does any good to pretend like nothing's wrong, that we didn't have a down quarter, that everything's just going to be okay with no real strategy behind that. Those things aren't authentic. Those are, wishing, and that doesn't get it done. I think the other is to be empathetic, you know, to understand that people are going to have a reaction when we deliver bad news. You know, maybe we lost a major account. Nobody wanted to. It happened. There's going to be fear. There's going to be worry. Be transparent about it. Be empathetic about it. But I also think then trying to draw on those relationships, drawing back on that bedrock of what is your mission, your vision, your values, your strategy, what's working well in the business. Make sure to provide a credible plan of recourse, of reaction. Don't promise the future that you can't guarantee, but paint a picture of what that positive future that you intend to make happen. And I think also making sure to find those opportunities to strengthen that cohesiveness among a group as opposed to otherwise. I mentioned at one point that I had military experience. We spent a lot of time working on team cohesion because we knew we would be put into challenging situations. We didn't want to wait to have to form bonds whenever, you know, the heat was on. We knew we were going to need to do that ahead of time. So I think that that's another reason why showing up as authentic leaders is always important, because someday you're going to need to draw on that, almost like a bank account. Sure. And I think one of those down quarters is the time that's going to show us how well we did that. How authentic have we been? How much trust do we have? How much faith of the people and how much willingness do we have from them to commit to going through the hard stuff and not abandoning ship or checking out or all the other bad things that can happen?
First, thanks for reminding me. I didn't say thank you for your service, Matt. We appreciate it. And it's definitely gives us the opportunity to be here today based on what you and others have done for us.
So thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for that. So, Matt, we've been talking a lot about leadership and HR over the past couple of segments. And leadership and authority has been around for decades, as you know, it's been there. What's the one myth you think that most of the people need to put aside and retire right now?
I think there's certainly, we talked about the myth that it's HR's job to do the people stuff. That's definitely not true. I think if you're in the leadership business, then you're in the people business through and through. And HR can absolutely help you, but it's your responsibility. But the second is, I think that it doesn't have to be as difficult as we make it. I think that a lot of the challenge that we experience as leaders is because of inauthenticity and misalignment and either not knowing or blocking or preventing this natural flow of our leadership. It doesn't mean that it's easy, right? It's a lot of hard work to make things as natural as possible, but it's the hard inner work of having the courage and the confidence to do the type of reflection, to slow down, to not allow us to slip into fear-based leadership, but instead create systems that actually support both the mission and people's welfare within it. I think all that is super important. So I think it's a myth that leadership has to feel wrong. If it feels hard, if it feels draining, then something's not quite right, and there's something to be examined there. I think whether the times are difficult or the times are joyous, it's an up economy, a down economy, the reality is that leadership can feel effortless if we've done the hard work of making sure that everything is in alignment.
And there are people who are honestly put into leadership roles that aren't, by expression, qualified to be leaders because they were maybe a successful salesperson. And, that way they think the upper management think that they could be leading a sales team. Is that one of those myths that also need to be kind of looked at and evaluated a little bit more?
Yeah, I think there's two major mistakes. One comes from the employer who says, you know what, we need some scalability here. Charlie's great at sales. Let's make him a sales manager. Okay, great. The other is that Charlie may feel like if I'm going to get a raise, if I'm going to be seen in a positive light by my classmates who are also on LinkedIn, I'm going to have to get promoted. And this is the only way. And I think both are bad ideas if there's not a natural and genuine interest in leading others and really driving the business in an indirect way and also caring for them, meaning the people who you're going to have this, that are going to report to this person in terms of their career welfare, yes, but also even just their human welfare. We spend so much time at work and we know the toll it can take to have bad leadership or a bad work experience. You take that home to your family, you carry that in your body. I hold the mantle of leadership in such high regard. And it saddens me to think about how lightly we treat it sometimes on both sides, to be honest. I think as employers, we should be doing more to develop leaders. And for leaders, who are in the rank and file, I think that we all need to do more to really study the craft and to practice it and to find that authenticity and that alignment.
How does one get trained to become a good leader?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great programs out there. I like the ones that are balanced in terms of their technical and their human elements. I think it's a fallacy to think that we're just going to productivity our way to, a better tomorrow. But at the same time, we can't overly lean on something that's, sounds really good and feels really good, but doesn't produce results. The reality is we need both. And ideally, the trifecta, it would be to complete a puzzle that I call performance, people, and purpose. I think that we've kind of gotten away from it a little bit. It was very much in vogue after the pandemic for people who had their values rejuggled to say, what's my impact, my contribution, my meaning in this world? Now things are in such dire straits that people are like, I just want stability. I'm holding on for dear life. I don't really have time for meaning and purpose, but it will come back. I think these things are cyclic. So if you're checking all the boxes in your leadership development program that goes down to performance and people and purpose, you're doing pretty well. And if you're an individual who's not being afforded that by your employer, then you have to do what I did when I first came out. I had a trunk full of audiobooks. You don't have to do audiobooks, books on tape, CDs. We've progressed since then. But I do think that self-study, that trying to just study the craft and do everything you can on your own, it can still be done. But I do think the ideal is a partnership where individuals are willing to work hard to become better leaders and the employer provides some level of structured leadership development for them. That's the real sweet spot.
I love that. Thanks, Matt. We're going to take a short break, and coming up next in our final segment, is how to turn all this into an authority engine, content, the culture, and leadership signals that compound over time. We'll be right back. I'm Jeff Brandeis.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
Welcome back to the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis. Don't miss a second of this show or any Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS for instant access to our bilingual lineup. Prefer our podcasts? Listen anytime at nowmedia.tv. Now Media TV is here 24/7. Welcome back, Matt, to our final segment and to our listeners. We've talked about authority as alignment, authority as systems, and authority as leadership mindset. Now let's make it practical. How does a leader build a visible authority presence without becoming a brand character their team doesn't recognize? So Matt, authority compounds when your internal culture matches your external message. They need to be aligned. So let's talk about how leadership and credibility to the market influence the content, the thought leadership, and consistent leadership behaviors that create trust at scale. So Matt, what's the difference between thought leadership and content noise?
Yeah, content noise is easy. Thought leadership is hard. Content noise is more possible than ever. It just seems that there's so much with the explosion of generative AI, and even before that, just the access to the tools, it's very easy to publish, right? Ever since, you can go all the way back to when people had blogs, and then social media makes it easy to have a platform and a megaphone and to talk to whoever will listen. So talking is easy. Having something thoughtful to say is hard. And I think that thought leadership itself, when you think about it, if we're going to borrow from the leadership aspect of that phrase, leadership is all about encouraging others to contribute their collective efforts to a shared mission. That's my definition of leadership. So thought leadership is a way of saying, how do I shift the view? How do I bring and raise awareness to basically this collective aim of ours? And so when you're in a business and you have stakeholders, you have customers that you're trying to provide a thoughtful product or service, there's typically something that you know that they don't, because you've been on this journey. You may have solved this problem in a certain way that they haven't understood. And so thought leadership, therefore, is how do you create this collective aim that, you know, everybody's can want to be a part of? Content noise is where you start to see, sometimes they call them listicles or just content, obvious things that are just platitudes, but they're packaged, they're slick, they're glossy. They might even get a lot more engagement than your thought leadership. That doesn't mean that true thought leadership isn't as valuable, even if it's not as shareable. That's how I'd kind of distinguish the two. It's tried and true sort of content that really doesn't advance the mission versus thought leadership that's like, it makes you say, oh, I hadn't really thought of it that way, or I hadn't really seen it that way. But now that you're saying it, it actually resonates. And it's something that I could really get behind to try to make a positive change in my situation and or potentially in the world.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Matt, you know, today's environment, we're hearing more and more of when you're presenting or you're talking to people is to honestly tell a story, get people involved in where you're going, what you've done, where you've been. How can leaders use what they've experienced within the organization, the wins, the lessons, the values, without violating the trust of the people or the organization?
Yeah, I love storytelling as a key leadership discipline for the future and the present, because, you know, we are wired for story. We all know memorable stories. If you think about your favorite books and movies, they're all stories, right? Yep, and I think that they're just a very natural way of communicating. They help us to really increase relatability, to create understanding, to generate positive energy towards some future if we can describe it. So in terms of where do we find our stories, the first I would say is to mine your own history. Like think back to other experiences you've had, everything from youth sports to high school jobs to earlier parts of your career before the company you're in now, before the company you founded, whatever it is. There's a very rich history you have that you'll find that people can relate to those things, even though they're from a bygone era, if you will. Another great story example is when you think about your customer stories. So customer stories are generally pretty safe to share internally. You're not necessarily going to talk about them publicly, but if you're trying to generate excitement among your employee base, having one of your account managers or a sales professional talk about, you know, a customer who had a real success story, that's something that I don't think we do often enough, because there's real energy in those stories. It's a real credible example about the mission being played out. So I think it takes a little bit of effort, but being able to get volunteers to talk about their experiences with a customer, how they solved a problem, that can be hugely important. To the extent that you can encourage level down leaders to share parts of their story, I think that works really well too. Being able to you're a manager of a frontline team and you had a situation, could you tell us about that at the next town hall or the next company meeting? Just give them 5 minutes to say, here's what was happening. Here's the dilemma that we faced. Here's what we did. And here was the result. And really, then as almost the moderator, they can act in your role as a show host to be able to say, let me tell you my view. I'm the CEO, but let me tell you what I saw play out here and highlight some of your cultural values that have been plastered all over the website and the break rooms, et cetera, but are just kind of out there. The stories bring it, you know, front and center. So I feel like those are some ways that we can start to involve others in the storytelling, but we still get to control the narrative.
All right. So, Matt, that leads me into this natural question. Why you didn't wake up one day that you wanted to be the godfather of talent optimization or talent management? What is your story that got you into doing what you do today?
I think I was surprised by how much I really gravitated toward the people dynamic inside of businesses. And I think when I got out of military service and I wanted to continue my leadership journey, as I mentioned, that door wasn't really open for me. So despite all my self-study, I committed myself to studying at the highest level and earning my PhD in coaching and leadership and making study of this, because I do feel that the way that we show up as leaders has the ability to, you know, make for a better world. At the Predictive Index, we say better work, better world. I fundamentally believe that. We spend so much time at work, and yet work is often done badly. And when we carry that, you know, home to our families and to our communities, it's avoidable and it's unfortunate. So my own personal story is I'm on a journey. I learn about leadership every day, Jeff, every day. I am not a perfect leader. I am far from it. I am constantly learning, but I'm willing to pay attention and I'm willing to share what I'm discovering along the way with people around me and anybody who's interested in learning and listening alongside me. That feels very genuine and authentic to me. You know, I may teach at the graduate level, leadership and HR, but that's a very singular mode. Most of the time, I'm just kind of learning alongside everybody else, and I'm wired to be able to see those unique connections and to tell those stories in a way that can help people not only perform better, but can create more resonance, you know, and more cohesion among their teams. So I feel very blessed to have been able to find my lane, so to speak, and have a chance to contribute. And when I see people who write back to me or share with me the impact that something I've shared has had, then I feel really good about having, you know, played a small part in making a tiny ripple in this ocean of work of ours.
Gotcha. Yeah. We talked about leadership is something that grows and you. It's constantly being learned, so to speak. So for our professionals who are building authority today, what's the fastest way for them to become credible without necessarily faking their expertise?
Yeah, I think trusting the authenticity you have. I think that I've had the situation before earlier in my career, Jeff, where I tend to try to use a little bit of levity. You know, I tend to be passionate about the things that I like to talk about, whether it's software development or whether it's data science or humans, it doesn't matter. I tend to really be into it. But I found that there was this almost sense that I had to curtail that somewhat and not use my humor, not use my relatability. And it was really stifling and kind of holding me back. And I was depriving those people around me of my impact. So I think learning to really trust what feels most natural, it's going to be okay, right? Even if you're in a very regulated environment, a very serious sort of, you can, if you're a humorous person, you should still use that humor because you have it in you and it's going to make you more of a magnet for people to be drawn toward you. So I think learning to trust it, getting more confident in, you know, however it is that you're wired, getting familiar with it, that's the fastest path I can think of. We spend so much time trying to manage impressions, and all that energy is just so brutal. It deprives us of our natural spark, if you will. So yes, of course, we have to be a contextual fit for our culture, our environment, our job requirements, our role, et cetera. But after all those boxes are checked, we don't have to shape as much of the impression as we sometimes do. So I think learning to let go of a lot of what you don't need is actually the fastest path to authenticity. It's not going and finding something and bring it in. You already have it. It's just allowing it to shine through.
Yeah, look deeper and be yourself at the end of the day.
100%.
Matt, as we talked about in the opening, you do have a podcast, Lead the People. What are the best leaders doing today that are doing differently than what they did before?
Yeah, I think they're people first leaders. I think the reality is that as we've continued to evolve, if you think about the Industrial Revolution, we used to treat people almost like machines because we didn't have complex enough machines to be able to do it. So whether they were acting on like on an assembly line, you think about that, and it was basically people were doing what robotics does today in many industries. And it was a very mechanical view of the business because that's the stage of evolution we were in. Unfortunately, many of our management systems haven't really evolved since the industrial age. And so now, though, when you look and you think about the human enterprise is what it is, it's humans at work. And so you have to basically be a people first leader without letting go of the results, the mechanics, the strategy, the operations, the technology. Of course, we need those things. So to me, I think that the most effective leaders are the ones who understand, you know, sometimes we call it head, heart, hands. Like all three of those are at play for any given worker. It's true for any collective team.
Back up. Head.
Head, heart, hands. Yeah,
head, heart, hands. And can, okay.
Yeah, head, heart, hands. So when you think about your hands, it's like the technical aspects of doing the work. When you think about the head, it's do we have the right strategy? Are we connecting with one another? Are we making decisions, communicating effectively? And the heart comes down to that meaning, that sense of purpose, that shared sense of mission as to why is the world a better place with our business in it? Like those things are very meaningful to the modern worker, even if they're a little shell-shocked right now. So I think as a CEO, if you're basically saying like, have we set up the right systems, to use your term, that make sure that the work can be done efficiently, that the cohesiveness among our teams is there because we have a leadership capacity to really take care of people's collective needs, but also that the reason I started this business in the first place is coming through every day and people can see their contribution toward it. If all three of those things are true, you're going to be just fine.
Awesome. So Matt, you're obviously on the authority playbook. So if you had to give our viewers your authority playbook of a checklist of maybe two or three different things that they could do over the next 30 days, what would they be?
Three simple steps. Awareness, insight, action. The first is pay attention. When you start to develop awareness for yourself, you start to take more of a curiosity in others and how they show up and notice differences. That's where it begins. The insight, Jeff, is where we start to connect to saying, how is it showing up in the business? How is this showing up in my KPIs, my dashboards, my OKRs, all that alphabet soup we love so much, the metrics that we hold on to so dearly? How do you think those metrics existed? You know, they come because of human interactions and organization working together. And then the last one, when it comes to take action, is when you see something that's an opportunity to be more authentic, take it. Try to use humor in a meeting if you find yourself to be a humorous person. Do some storytelling if you're not a natural storyteller. Invite somebody else. Be transparent. You know, here's a fabulous technique, super simple, fast and free, Jeff. First 5 minutes. Can you use the first 5 minutes of your next meeting to get the people part right? Just be together, ask, take a curiosity in each other's day, their needs, their experience at work, and then use the whole rest of the meeting for all the worky work stuff. That's an example of a very simple action that really solidifies a team at a time when they're really struggling right now. And it's going to pay dividends in performance.
That's a great takeaway, Matt. Thank you for sharing that. So Matt, for leaders who want to follow your work or contact you, where can they find you?
Easiest place to find me is on LinkedIn. I've spent a lot of time over there, really enjoy connecting with audience on LinkedIn. Certainly, you can listen to the Lead the People podcast and check out the Predictive Index. Boost that self-awareness, understand your own leadership strengths and those areas that you want to be aware of as well.
Matt, this was so powerful. I truly enjoyed having you on the show. Getting reconnected with you has been just awesome because this has made authority real. It's not a buzzword. It's not a marketing trick. It's something that's built through alignment, leadership, and systems that truly scale. to everyone watching or listening, if your authority is the message you want the market to believe, then your team is the proof. Align the people, clarify the roles, and lead like it matters. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook. See you next week. Thanks for joining.